Hi, I'm Gwen Farley, and I want to start by thanking Wendy and her team today for inviting me to speak today. I first started to go into the archives of MoMA to look at Victor D'Amico and his work when I was a Landau Fellow in the Education Department in 2005, and it's been great over the past month to revisit some of that material and to still be astounded at, how little is known about these figures that we're talking about. So I think this conference is really important, so thank you. Today, I'm focusing on two examples of early outreach initiatives that Victor D'Amico, MoMA's first head of education, as we now well know, created in the 50s and 60s at the museum. The first, and this is the one that I'm going to go most in depth with, was a short-lived TV program called Through the Enchanted Gate, which we saw a little bit of last night, which MoMA co-produced with WMBC MBT in 52 and 53. And the second was the international iterations of MoMA's beloved Art Carnival, which began as an annual holiday event and ended up in Delhi in India. By reviewing these programs, I will look at how they related to D'Amico's pedagogical interests in general, the field of education at large, as well as the social and political context. So kind of taking up where Briley left off yesterday and looking at the context that D'Amico is working in. As we heard yesterday evening, Alfred Barr hired D'Amico, whom is looking at us right now, in 1937 to head up an experiment in popular instruction at the museum. He came with much experience, having taught at progressive education organizations in New York, where he had developed his own practice, which was based on experiential learning and child-centered education, and was, of course, influenced by the progressives such as John Dewey. His newly formed position at the Modern came on the heels of an important report by Artemis Packard, which was commissioned by Nelson Rockefeller, who was then the president of MoMA, in 37. The purpose of that report was to better understand the popular role of the museum. In light of its findings, Barr charged D'Amico with the task of making the museum's collections and exhibitions more accessible to and enjoyable for an ever-expanding audience. And D'Amico, no doubt, would also have been aware that that report also identified a schism between the curatorial and education goals within the institution already by 1937 and other art museums of this period. And I'm going to put up this art tune by Pablo Alguera, who's speaking after me, which I think perfectly encapsulates this schism, which I'm sure some of us know intimately. So Packard stated in his report, and I quote, "In fact, but not in theory, the art museums at the present time serve the interest of the expert and the connoisseur far more than they serve the interest of the public." He then cautioned against this and suggested seeking ways to align these two goals of MoMA to fulfill its mission. And I quote, he said, "These two objectives will at times seem mutually antagonistic, as this cartoon suggests, but in the long run, I'm convinced that they will be found to complement and reinforce each other." So D'Amico's earliest programs at MoMA took on these issues while also engaging new audiences. For the most part, they took place on-site in MoMA's galleries, but mainly in their education spaces and garden. And they encouraged participants to tap into their own creativity in order to better understand modern art. These initiatives, as we saw last night, included the Young People's Gallery, which existed from 37 to 48, the War Veteran Art Center, which also deserves a lot more research because it was one of the earliest sites of art therapy in the United States, the People's Art Center, which is a center which conflated children's learning and adult learning, and eventually the Art Carnival, which I'll talk about in a little bit more detail later. All of these programs share common goals, which D'Amico clearly articulated in relation to a high school program he developed at the museum in 1950. And I'm just going to read the goals that he listed. One was to discourage and eliminate unconscious prejudices towards modern art. Two was to bring a realization of the social causes in rebellions and revolutions in art in this century, and a more fundamental enjoyment of these plastic, poetic, and psychological interpretations, and three, to produce greater freedom of personal creativity. It barely needs to be pointed out, although as we heard last night, it certainly needs more work, that echoing through each of these goals is strong evidence of the social and political moment in which D'Amico, Barr, and modern artists were working at that time. An immediate post-war context in which mainstream and traditional education art institutions tended to value objects and facts over the students' experience and creativity. In the late 1940s, D'Amico's programming increasingly sought to engage those who were not yet visitors of the museum. During the period, the museum founded a television committee to produce shows that promoted and expanded the reach of its collections beyond its walls. And this committee had a very large budget for the time. And again, I think it's an area where more research could be done. In a 1953 report in MoMA's archives, D'Amico spoke of the education department's experiments with this relatively new media. He said, and I quote, "We hoped but did not dare to believe that one could fascinate the child and guide him directly through the television tube," end quote. He was referring, of course, to this program, Through the Enchanted Gate, which was a two-part series that ran on WNBC in 52 and 53. The first part was aimed at children between the ages of 3 and 10, similar to the carnival, so those children that could enter the gate. And the second was focused on family learning. This shift in focus was an effort to counter D'Amico's impression that the first series, which was well and heavily evaluated, was popular among parents because, quote, "it got rid of the children for a half an hour," end quote. The overarching mission of the series was then to teach children and families to tap into their own creativity together, to experiment and play. However, D'Amico also had another agenda for this program, one that was particularly close to his own commitment to the broader field of both modern art and education at large, and shared with his colleagues on the Committee on Art Education, of which D'Amico was one of the founders and heads. This team were frustrated with contemporary treatments of art education on television in the US, which I should have a slide of. They use the example of John Nagy's popular television show, Learn to Draw with John Nagy, in which he used traditional techniques based on precision and mimesis to teach students how to paint landscapes and portraits. In a letter from the committee to NBC's Ted Kott, they charged Nagy, whose name I could be pronouncing incorrectly, and forgive me if I am, and other such popular shows with using, quote, "dictatorial methods" that had the potential, quote, "to destroy the very values necessary to the child's healthful growth." Instead, the committee felt that if utilized well, television had the potential to create, quote, "emotionally stable children," which was critical to a society at a time of world crisis. And I think that's really interesting to note that D'Amico and his colleagues really felt like they were working in a time of crisis. The goals for Through the Enchanted Gate, therefore, espoused two vital aspects. On the one hand, the pragmatic aim to provide families, children, and teachers with the best tools to learn about art together. And on the other hand, the program sought to promote democracy in learning and foster stable children at a precarious social and political moment. At the end of each episode, in fact, D'Amico directly address the audience, and this is my favorite part of each series, to reflect upon the activities while also making transparent these goals. And I'm just going to show a short 1 minute clip of D'Amico doing this.
Parents have asked me in their letters and in person, why do you choose these different themes? They're very interesting, but what's the idea? Well, it's really quite simple. We like to avoid things that are cliches, everyday things. Your imagination opens the whole world to you. If it's alive, then everything is good. You can use anything. But the cliches stand in the way, especially of the child. They block him. They hinder him. The kind of cliches I mean are the kind of pretty pictures that you see in some of children's books. You know, the cute things. Oh, bunnies, Easter bunnies, and children with bright, sparkly eyes that look like dolls rather than children, or maybe animals that are prettified, that are neither human nor animal, or the comic strip thing that they see a lot of. So what we do is we avoid them. We circumvent them. Now, we're very glad you ask us these questions because it helps us to tell you what is behind these programs, what we're trying to do, the way we work. And in doing so, we hope that you'll get an idea on how to help your children, because through you, we'll have a way of working with them. So try to think of the kind of thing that is imaginative when you do it yourself, and also when your child does it. Let his imagination take hold. You know, it doesn't matter what motivation you use. Whatever stirs your imagination is the best.
So as D'Amico is creating through the Enchanted Gate, Nelson Rockefeller founded a new department at the museum, the International Program Department, which is incidentally where I now work, and the affiliate group, the International Council, which supported its efforts then and continues to today. Its purpose was to circulate exhibitions of MoMA's collection around the world. For instance, it traveled Edward Steichen's Family of Man exhibit to approximately 68 countries across Latin America, Africa, Eastern Europe, and Asia. I mean, it's unfathomable to see a show travel to that many locations today. It stands to reason that a logical step then for D'Amico was to step up his outreach efforts and to move from a national platform via television to an international one in line with the larger museum's goals of the time. And starting from the late 1940s, the museum started to circulate the Art Carnival under the auspices and support of the International Council to world fairs in Milan, Brussels, and Barcelona. As with the TV program, for D'Amico, the traveling of the carnival was not simply a matter of creating art-making classes and opportunities in different countries, but rather his aim was to expand the museum's reach to encourage as broad a public as possible to engage with modern art and to promote democratic practices in education and, of course, eradicate outdated teaching methods. Now, much work still needs to be done to better understand how the carnival was received by audiences, teachers, and museum professionals in the countries that it traveled to. And in particular, I would say, in the case of India, where it was presented to Indira Gandhi by Mrs. Kennedy on behalf of the museum in 1963, actually. A site was constructed there, educators were trained by D'Amico and his colleagues, and classes took place. However, little is known about the legacy of the carnival, which was given as a way to reinvent art education practices in public schools in Delhi. And of where it is right now, its use, what happened to it, what happened to the students who participated in this program. So I think the voice of those participants in this case would be really interesting to try and access. To conclude, I propose that D'Amico's outreach efforts at MoMA were very much of their time. Through the Enchanted Gate was an attempt to create an alternative model of art-making appreciation for families across America and to retrain teachers and parents in more child-centered approaches, while the international endeavors were very much in line with U.S. foreign policy of the time, which focused on exporting models of American best practice as examples to the world. D'Amico's methods for achieving these were both progressive and forward-looking. By tapping into an expanded post-World War II international community, and through his use of new media, his programs, among many others, as we've learned, helped pave the way, one could argue, for today's global museum that increasingly uses web as a learning tool to engage new audiences. Thank you.